The Around the NFL Podcast. We'll be prepared for the robot invasion.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
What's up? Special day. Special podcast. We didn't even know we were going to do a podcast until, about an hour or two ago, but we decided we'll get a little quick Thanksgiving preview in.
It's like in the 80s where the sitcoms had the very special episode of Different Strokes or whatever.
Special. This one will deal with less sensitive topics,
right.
I believe, than that.
Yeah, no bike keep bike owner in a local shop.
Right. No one's going to have to decide whether they keep the baby or not.
Right. Yeah. Well,
no Dudley.
A lot of podcasts.
No Dudley involved in this one.
No Dudley. A lot of podcasts. You know who is involved? The great gold standard behind the glass. What's up, buddy?
Not too much. How you fellas doing?
I like to call. I'm doing well. I like to call this a Zach attack behind the glass.
Boom.
You know, a little.
Yeah,
were you too young for Saved by the Bell, by the way?
No, it was a formative part of my early life.
Oh, good. So you enjoy the song Friends Forever by the Zach Attack.
I did indeed. In fact,
number one around the world.
I think I have it right here.
Friends forever.
That's a saucy number.
That's tasty. Underrated as a song.
What? The actual structure of it?
And I thought it was
a melody?
Yeah, it's catchy. I would play that on repeat in my house.
Are you on acid right now, Mark?
I'm just saying. I think it's swatted down immediately as a product when it's stronger than you think.
All right, very good. Much like Emmylou Harris songs, as Wes contended on Sunday's pod. Wes, by the way, you haven't heard him yet. You didn't hear him say, "Hi, Dan," at the top of the show. That's because Wes is on his off day. And he's got stuff to do. Wes, actually, because he's such a pro, what did he say to you, Greg, when you checked in on his availability?
He was in a game rewind groove. You know, he didn't want to jump out of that little groove. And that's
Greg falling for that hook, line, and sinker believes that that's actually happening right now with
Wes. That's why he's the scientist. And I have to commend you guys. I listened to the podcast the other night, and as usual, when I'm not involved, I think the podcasts get better.
I wish you weren't a liar.
I'm a self-hater, and it was a very enjoyable
listen. No, he's telling the truth, Zach.
I really would. And, you know, it's something I would listen to in the world.
Well,
we got a tweet from someone saying that it was not even nearly as good without Greg.
That was Greg.
Nah, you're – yeah. That was my dummy account.
We missed you on Sunday, and we went on without the boss, but we are glad to have you back. And Thursday's show – Or Friday show. When will our next show go up?
We're going to do another show on Wednesday. It's going to go up Wednesday night, previewing the entire week.
Big holiday.
The rest of the week.
So, you're going to get this show where we're just going to break down what happened on Monday night with two games, of course, on Monday, and then going through the three big Thursday games on Thanksgiving. A lot of great football to be played on Thursday. And then our third show of the week will be all Sunday and Monday Night Football, looking at those games. So a lot of fun, a lot of stuff to get to. So let's do what we got to do. We'll start with Monday Night Football. Actually, two games on Monday, of course, because of that big storm in Western New York forced a game to be moved. But why don't we start with the big, more exciting or more fun game to watch. That occurred in the Superdome, where the New Orleans Saints had lost two in a row in their own building, and they have the Baltimore Ravens coming in. No way the Saints can lose three in a row at the Superdome, right? Well, they can. That's the true story here, because the Ravens get a monster day out of Justin Forsett, who runs for 182 yards and two scores. Big Drew Brees pick six, and there you have it, 34-27. The Ravens win. They stay in the mix in the AFC North, right in the middle of the pack. It's there for the taking for Baltimore, and then for the Saints, I mean, what can you say? They are now 4-7 because of the division is so bad. The NFC South, they are in first place still, tied with the Atlanta Falcons. But let's just start here. And, Greg, I'll open up with you because you got a hero pick on this game. You thought the Ravens were going to take care of business against the Saints. You were smart to do it because we were too slow getting out on New Orleans. They are a bad team right now.
Their defense is a disaster. I mean, Rob Ryan, everywhere he goes, it seems like the first year, there's a nice sort of honeymoon year. He's like the Terrell Owens of coaches. You know what I mean? It's like everything's great for the first year, and then the second year, it all falls apart, and they're just – they play like Rob Ryan. They're over-aggressive, and they over-pursue their linebackers, and they had no answer for Justin Forsett. Every time there was misdirection and play action, it was like the whole Saints defense went one way, and the Ravens running game went the other, and this is week after week. They really had a very similar game plan to the Bengals, who won in New Orleans just the week before.
It seems like teams that play the Saints are in for 3 or 4 days of gushing praise afterwards. Because they make opposing running games number one look dynamite. Justin Forsett has had a very good season.
He's third in the league.
No, he's absolutely. I mean, but it helps to go play a running defense like this. If I knew that Baltimore was going to give up the most yards it had since 1998, 525 yards, I would have thought that we were going to get this right by picking the Saints.
Yeah, and Drew Brees, you look at his numbers, and you're like, oh, Brees is playing like the Brees we know and love. 35 of 45, throws for 420. Yeah, man, with 3 touchdowns and an interception. But Brees was not able to make the biggest play of the game when he threw the pick six. It was intended for Jimmy Graham, was picked off, running for the score. And what was that, Will Hill that had it?
Yeah.
And when that happened, really, to me, the game felt over at that point. The Saints seemed to be in a hole where they weren't going to get out, and they didn't. I mean, Brees, they can't afford for him to be slipping up, as he's done all season.
Well, it was such a perfect encapsulation of their season, because I really don't feel like Drew Brees is playing that bad, but every mistake he makes, he just pays for it. Like that throw was a yard and a half off and late, and it was because pressure came on him. He shouldn't have thrown it, and it was like, if he makes one of those bad throws, it's just one of those seasons where it's coming back for a touchdown.
Well, and let's give a little credit to Ozzie Newsome, because that AFC North, Baltimore, is right in the mix. I think they may be – we talked about it was the most complete team, and we flipped them.
I thought
them.
They're the best team. That's why I picked them. I think they're the best team in this division.
I mean, they whacked Pittsburgh a couple times. They've been swept by Cincinnati.
It hasn't shown up for me in big games. It hasn't shown up. But I do think just offense, defense, running game, passing game, that they're the most complete.
Well, and they went out. They got Will Hill on defense, which was a player the Giants gave up on for good reason when they did. But then, you know, Forsett, they've gone out, and they've had to reshape some positions and done a nice job with it. How about the AFC North, 10-1-1 against the NFC South? That's why that South is sucking the joint up so much. They cannot beat the AFC.
Well, those two divisions have a symbiotic relationship. That's why you see those great records in the AFC North. It's because they're all 3-0, 4-0 against the NFC South.
And, you know, I floated the idea downstairs before the show of forking the Saints and just, why don't we just fork the entire NFC South?
We've already forked the other three.
Yeah, we already forked the other three teams. We said they have no chance of winning the division. I mean, someone's going to win this division, and I've been getting killed picking the Saints at various points this season. Are they going to win the division, or is one of these dud teams actually going to steal this thing and go into the playoffs with 6 or 7
wins?
The
Panthers could still win this division.
Sure, half a game out. I mean, I think
grotesque.
I think the Saints will win it, and I do think there's a really good chance that 4-8 is leading the division next week, because New Orleans is going to Pittsburgh. Carolina is going to Minnesota this week. That's not too hard. Atlanta has a tough game as well this week. And I think, who is it against? Do you remember? Atlanta. Very tough game at home in Atlanta. After the Pittsburgh game, New Orleans has Carolina at home, at Chicago, Atlanta at home, at Tampa Bay. They just need to take care of those home games in the division. I could actually see them winning 4 straight to finish the season, go 8-8, because those are lousy teams, and they've mostly lost these games to quality opponents. They've shown they can't beat good teams, but I do think they win maybe 3 or 4 of those games, win 7 games, win the division.
I like what Dan suggested this morning on NFL Now, that the 6-10 Saints win the division, host the Seahawks, and beat him in the playoffs, just like they did a couple years ago in reverse.
I have a bit of a Sessler that we watched 2 playoff teams in this game. And you know what? I could totally see the Saints getting a little hot and knocking off a team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then getting absolutely whooped in Green Bay or something like that. So, you know, these are 2 pretenders that we were watching in this game. But, you know, the Saints aren't. Don't mark them off like they're not going to win another game, because they'll probably get it together. There's too much talent there.
It's weird, though, because we can talk about them with all this hope, but if they're in any one of the other 7 divisions, they are absolutely the number one biggest disappointment in the league.
Yeah.
There's no team that's been a bigger disappointment.
And by the way, Mark, one last point on the AFC North. I'm coming around on your thinking that I think the Browns, if they're going to finally get back to the playoffs, they're going to need 11 wins, because I think the Ravens are going to win 11.
Woo!
And I think the Bengals are going to go 10-5-1. and that's going to put the Browns in a tough spot if they go 10-6.
Three teams from that division make the playoffs, I think.
All right, moving on to the second game. It was really the first game that was played.
This was a game?
It was a game.
It's a football contest.
It was a game. The New York Jets played a game because the Buffalo Bills were snowed under in Western New York. They moved the game to Detroit, as we know. You would think the Jets would be at the advantage. They got to practice all week and under a bubble in New Jersey. Didn't work out that way. This was an absolute disaster. A 38-3 win for the Bills in a game that was never really close. I mean, it was tight at the end of the first half, but this was a game where the Jets looked overmatched from the start. Michael Vick had one of the worst games of his career. He got benched in the third quarter for Geno Smith. And this, to me, when I think about this game, and I think a lot of us, and you don't have to be a football genius to know that, or a football baby to know that Rex Ryan's job was pretty much over with the Jets after the season. After this, after you see the team essentially look like they quit on him in this game, you could start the clock right now because the countdown is on and Rex is gone New Year's Day or January 2nd.
I watched this game with Dan last night, and we all know that Dan grew up, your dad and your grandfather, too, I assume, Jets fans through the years, the Hanses family.
Yeah, my dad.
And his great-grandfather founded the Jets.
That's
no,
right.
They've only been around since 1960.
All right, okay, but so that's fair. Like, I would say, though, we kind of tried to piece it together, what fan bases have been through a longer, more brutal existence. There's only one or two that you could say in front of the Jets. And Greg's shaking his head, but really, outside of a few playoff appearances that were ill-fated in recent years, it's been long streaks of nothingness. And Ryan,
there's a lot of fan bases that feel that. Everyone thinks they have the most pain.
Yeah, but Cardinals, then break it down.
But there's actual proof against 95% of
Cardinals,
those fan bases.
Cardinals, Browns.
Been to a Super Bowl.
Lions. Well, Jets have been around. Just because the Jets only made it one game short, I mean.
Thing is, last night, having to watch the game with Dan, it's like, yeah, you know, you're at the end of another era with Rex Ryan out the door
right.
here.
It didn't work. This was 6 years that essentially it was nothingness. And, you know, I had some
fun early.
A little bit, but, you know, when you lose in the AFC title game twice, it's a lot of agony, too, when you lose those games. But I really think, ultimately, this is a situation where Rex is gone. I wish well for the man as a human being, but I really hope Idzik is also out of a job here. And, you know, Geno Smith, they got to move on from him entirely, and Michael Vick is nothing more than a backup at this stage of his career. They need to hit on three big things: quarterback, GM, coach, and it's one of the biggest off seasons in recent memory for this franchise. But, you know, let's move to the team that's actually in the contention in this game, the Bills. And I don't know how much, Mark, you were scared watching the Bills because you know the Brownies have a big matchup in Orchard Park next week. But I don't know how much to take out of this game for the Bills. I know they have skill. They can get to the quarterback. They can make some plays. Kyle Orton's been good enough to make the offense move. But I don't know how much I take out of this game to really be that impressed because the Jets just didn't show up in this game.
The one thing that, and Greg's pointed this out, like what's the best position group? You know, what's the best unit on the field in a game like this? And Buffalo's defense, week after week, is able to get in the quarterback's face and totally blow up game plans. I think last night, that was, for me, even the bigger story than anything they did on offense. That scares me because in any weather, they're going to be good. But their schedule down the stretch, they have to win that Browns game. Because I think after that, they are absolutely facing a laundry list.
Let's play the schedule game.
Yeah. They have no chance to make the playoffs.
Let's play the schedule game.
They really
game.
Don't because of the schedule. But they've had a great year.
Who wants to be the arbiter of victory or defeat?
I will be.
All right, here
to
we go. Home to Browns.
I'm going to win.
All right, 7-5. So, ooh, wow, Cleveland. That's Mark Sessel, your number one fan. At Broncos.
Loss.
7-6. Home to Packers.
Loss.
7-7 at Raiders.
Win.
8-7 at Pats.
Loss.
All right, so we don't even really talk about this team too
much.
No,
whatever.
They
could be 9-7. You could squeeze out 9-7.
Just because they have a ridiculously hard schedule the rest of the way, it's hard to see it happening. But it's impressive how good a team piloted by Kyle Orton, who they signed in August, is. And that defensive line that you mentioned, I think it's the best defensive line in the league, and I can't think of many defensive lines over the last 5 years that are better 1-4, where all four of those guys, Jerry Hughes, Kyle Williams, Mario Williams, and Marcel Darius, have strong Pro Bowl cases. I think all four could go.
Mario Williams is earning that paycheck now. He has 12 sacks now, so he's on pace for 17 or 18 sacks. That's exactly what they paid for him when they gave him that huge contract a couple years ago.
I mean, before E.J. Manuel rode the pine, we looked at the Bills as a team that might go 2-14, 3-13, and they have a new owner, and a lot of times that means new GM, new coach, sweep it out. I think Marone... And I think they've saved their job.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Unless they really flame out in these last five games. But I think they're on some level in a very similar boat to the Jets. So they're still pretenders and nobodies until they locate the quarterback.
Yeah.
And I would think, just like the Jets will be, the Bills will be very aggressive in the first round, whether they pick at where their spot is or look to move up, because they are not going anywhere until they find a quarterback. And Doug Whaley, who mortgaged his whole future on Sammy Watkins, it behooves him to find somebody that can get him the ball in the long-term sense.
I do, before we get out of this game, I do have to, you know, kids will be, I'll be telling my grandchildren when I think back on this crazy game at a neutral field on a Monday night, you know, no Bills and Jets fans actually there, I'll describe it as the Robert Woods games. I love me some Robert Woods. I mean, he had five beautiful catches, 9 for 118, like four or five diving catches. That was one of the games of the year by any wide receiver. I know it was Robert Woods.
And you know Wes isn't here to come down on you on the Robert
Woods. He's still going to win his sandwich proposition.
There were some Bills fans, and there were even some Jets fans at that game. But I don't know how many fans are going to remember that game. I've never seen so many crowd shots of people that were completely – completely glazed over in the eyes. There was supposed to have been some heavy tailgating going on in
Detroit.
This
is Detroit. I mean, it's winter time in Detroit.
There is something about the neutral site random game. Zach, you mentioned it on Twitter that you find enticing. You just like the random time neutral site games.
It's just a strange magic to it.
I agree. I totally agree. There is something fun that it's just like this wacky game, you know, that you never happen again.
Speaking of strange magic, and while we have you here at Gold Standard, I want to ask you about a tweet from a couple hours ago. If you could just shine a light on it. Let me read it for the audience. This is from @thatdamnyank, who is up to almost 5,000 Twitter followers.
Wow.
Here we go. Here's the tweet. Some people in life load up on high-value food at the buffet. Others just enjoy the buffet. What does that mean?
Well, I don't want to get too profound on everyone here, but I do. So I'm gonna ground it in earthly circumstance. I was at the salad bar, and I saw a lot of loading up on, you know, high value ingredients. You have your eggs, your meat, etc. But it didn't look like a nice mix. And so for me in life, I say you get a nice mix in there. You don't worry about what costs the most, what the best value is. You just sort of enjoy your life.
Guess what, buddy? You just got a favorite
others,
star from the old Zeus for
thanks.
That.
The others just enjoy.
You're going to like my nacho cheese theory.
Ooh, you know? Wow, teaser. You know, don't give it to us all at once.
I won't.
Got to space this out. So interesting.
Next time.
Follow Zach Goldman @thatdamnyank.
For
so
more
great
buffet analysis.
I'm still not sure what it means, but it's
profound. It's kind of like the Dalton scale.
I feel a little bit like Jaden Smith.
Yeah, I think Zach graduated from Oxford in like 6 months. So whatever he says, I'm just going to pretend I'm following
it's
him.
It's accurate, and it is probably also very... very
I think what
talent.
I took it as was, so basically the people that you like, you are one of the people, you're just going to go there and enjoy the buffet experience overall. You're not going to get caught up in trying to like maximize,
you don't need to beat the buffet,
strategize how I'm going to have the best salad and whatever. It's just like, be there.
Totally.
I get very annoyed at salad bars.
You are famously annoyed. Yes.
I think that the behavior of a lot of people at salad bars is very questionable.
In fairness, you get annoyed by the behavior of people in a lot of social circumstances.
And you don't like food, so it's a bad combo.
Both true.
So again, if you want more on Mr. Goldman's buffet/buffoon dichotomy,
how many pops is his Twitter account going to get?
Thanks, guys.
Three.
So kind
I can't even get you to mention our own folder in NFL Now, which everyone should just, like I said, go to NFL Now, put on videos, and just leave it playing for hours.
Okay, yeah, do that. And then, of course, you know, go to iTunes and click stars. Give us 5 stars. Give us comments. Watch us on
Stitcher.
On Stitcher.
Wow.
Give us other things. Just
we are
give
trying
us what
very
we want.
Hard to not have this be a short podcast,
right,
as we
promise. Well, not only that, we're trying hard to have people turn off the podcast.
I know. Here we go. We are the worst. Let's move on to Thursday. Let's talk about 3 great games on Thanksgiving. Really, this is when the season begins. You have this great home stretch, and it starts with – with
starts with Jay Cutler.
It starts with Jay Cutler, and you know we don't have to see the Bears too much more this season, but this one we're locked in. I think we have one more game.
There's
with the
a primetime game on NFL Network. Great job there. The following week, Bears.
Well, I know. Well, I'm saying we're almost out of the woods. The Bears almost out of the woods, but we are going to watch the Chicago Bears head to Detroit to face the Lions. The Lions, of course, a tradition, always playing at home on Thanksgiving. And the Lions are coming off a loss to the Patriots in which they weren't very competitive. But I don't know how much you can even take from that because nobody's been competitive against the Patriots for almost 2 months. As we noted in the last podcast, they've on average outscored opponents 40-20 in the last 7 weeks. So on the other side, you have the Bears who, you know, who stank. But at the same time, they finally got a win at home at Soldier Field against a mediocre Bucks team. So everything seems to be pointing in the Lions' favor here, but can we trust the Lions? This is right about the time of year where the Lions usually go into their fade. They fold up like a cheap seat at the Pontiac Silverdome. So is that where are we going to see the Lions stumble in a game they need and should win?
I don't think so this week.
I don't think so either. They have three easy home games in a row, Chicago, Tampa Bay, Minnesota, and we talked about like the best unit on the field. I do trust that Lions defense. I mean, they couldn't slow down New England, but I don't think they'll have a big problem slowing down Chicago. You know, the Bears have gotten a little healthier the last week playing teams like the Bucs and the Vikings. It's a lot different on Thursday.
I think this might be a get well game for Detroit's offense, which has been a real issue for them. And they're having to win games 14-6. And, you know, you thought the opposite would happen, if anything, in Detroit. But Chicago's defense, we don't even know if Lance Briggs will play. Kyle Fuller might not play. They're losing guys. They're giving up 27.5 points a game, second worst in the league. I mean, they can't do anything right, and they don't have the offense to bail them out. So I look at this as Detroit's get-well opportunity.
A newsflash to any NFL Network producers listening to the show, by the way. Like, stop putting the Bears in the hunt.
Hey, jerky boys.
When you put that graphic up, they always have the Bears still in the hunt.
They are in the hunt for a top 10 draft pick and maybe a new coach.
Just let that sit in the air for a minute. Give us another blowtorch there. More. All right.
Don't you guys remember like the week after the Brady Quinn Matthew Stafford game? Maybe this wasn't a seminal moment for
2009.
You.
2009.
There was that great Matthew Stafford Brady Quinn game, and then there was a Thanksgiving game right after that. And I remember thinking, well, at least we've got an exciting, fun Lions quarterback for Thanksgiving every year now for the next decade. Mm. But now, it's like I'm not that excited about Matthew Stafford. He's not fun to watch.
Stafford is almost impossible to figure out. And then we talked about this last week, that the difference between Stafford and Cutler is perhaps just Stafford has a little flair for the dramatic that Cutler doesn't have. Cutler has a flair for being surly and dating 11 reality stars. But, like, I think that this is a good matchup of two guys that are enigmas. Somebody's going to step up in a big spot on Thursday and then eat some turkey.
I agree with Wes's argument against Detroit of late, which is that Jim Caldwell has become what we knew he would be by this point, a very conservative team that isn't going to take big chances. This could be, of the three games of the day, the dullest. Let's be honest. Let's get it out of the way early. That's the way it should be.
Unless Ndamukong Suh kicks some junk.
Well, for the person covering the game, that's right. There's always some
you
side stories.
You popping my junk?
Which happened 2 years ago.
You popping my junk on Thanksgiving? You can't do that.
Talked to Matt Schaub about that. We've not seen him since.
Hey, he won, by the way.
That was a great moment for the Texans.
24-game losing streak. Isn't that over?
You're right.
Ow!
Big moment for Matt Schaub.
All right. Matt Schaub had lost 24 games consecutively between the Texans and Raiders. He wasn't really involved
with any of them. On the payroll of teams that were doing that poorly.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's that game. I think across the board in this room, anyway, I think we all have the Lions. Anybody going to take a shot on the Bears?
No.
Okay, we move on to the middle game. Here is... And, Greg, you know I'm a junkie for NFC East football. Oh, my goodness. I am excited about this. The Philadelphia Eagles travel to Big D.
I'm going
to
move a couple more feet away from
Jerry World. Oofa. What do we got, 2-8-3 teams here?
You sound like you want to come into the office and maybe cover this
almost
game.
Almost. I'm thinking about it, and I'm going to kiss my wife on the forehead and pet my baby on the head and say, I got some NFC's football right. to attend to
well,
right now.
Well, she would understand, and so would Jack.
She'd be like, honey, you can watch it on the TV here. And then I'll throw the television on the ground. It's like, no, I got to be in the office for this. Eagles at Cowboys, a battle for supremacy. And I would never do that, by the way. I like my TV too much. A battle for supremacy in the NFC East. Whoever wins this game is in first place. I think they have a rematch shortly down the road after that, so we don't want to get too crazy and say the winner of this game wins the division. However, what a huge game between two very good teams. Feels like a bit of a coin flip game. I don't know. Last time Mark Sanchez played on Thanksgiving, butt fumble.
Right.
And
can't go that badly.
As a Jets fan, it's almost impossible for me to fathom a scenario where he gets his Thanksgiving redemption. But then again, football is tough. Sports are weird like that. Maybe that will be the big story, that he will have a shining moment on Thanksgiving. It makes sense. It would upset Jets fans. Your thoughts, gentlemen. Who's the better team? Neutral field, who's the better team?
Dallas, I'd go.
I would go Philly, which I guess this is giving away where we're probably going with these picks. Although it's on the road in Dallas, the Sanchez factor is something. But I still trust Philly more.
I don't think Philly's got a defense that can shut down Dallas in this game. They gave up 53 a couple weeks ago. You know, this is an incomplete team that's winning in weird ways. I give them credit for that too, by the way. But with Dallas, I think that this is the Thanksgiving game that Jerry Jones has waited for. For 15, 16 years. They're sitting in first place. They can drop a hammer. They do play them 2 weeks from now. I think that Giants game was the game. If Dallas was going to start to tailspin, we would have seen them lose that and lose the moment to Odell Beckham and company. They came through. They won the way they've been winning all year. That bye week came at the perfect time for them. Dallas wins this game.
I agree totally about the Eagles' defense. I don't see them putting up a performance that keeps Dallas below, say, 35 points. And I think also I'm picking the Cowboys here, and I would, if you had 2013 Nick Foles a quarterback right now, I would feel a lot better about the Eagles' chances of going on the road and winning this game. But with 2014 Mark Sanchez, who, by the way, has not played that well. He played well against the Panthers. He made some really nice throws, had a couple nice drives. But back-to-back weeks, he's been very inconsistent. I'm not ready to say he's going to step in and deliver a big-time game. So I think the quarterback discrepancy is so big. I think Romo's playing at such a high level this season. I think Sanchez is a middle-of-the-road guy. And I think when you put the game in Dallas, to me, that's why the Cowboys win.
I think you guys have been hanging out with Elliot Harrison and Michael Fabiano and all these guys who just want to fall in love with the Cowboys as a national story. What games have you been watching? The last home games they've had, right? They lost. Granted, Brandon Whedon was one of the quarterbacks involved. That's also lost to Colt McCoy. Okay, and then we're giving them huge props because they beat those juggernaut Giants at the last second. It's like that's not an overly impressive result. The Eagles are a mystifying team too. But the Cowboys have not impressed me in particular over the last 5 weeks.
By the way, you're sleeping on the magic of the NFC East there, because I don't care what the Giants' record is. The Cowboys go into the Meadowlands in primetime. That is almost always going to be a dogfight. Those teams always play each other close wherever they're being played. Are the Cowboys a dominant team? Are they a 95 Cowboys? No, but I think they're a legitimately good team that's going to win 11 games.
And they're not winning in fluky ways. They came out with a formula early. They're running the ball, and they're doing it well. Their defense, we thought, would be giving up 40 points a game. It's doing the job to some degree.
It's not a great defense.
Not at all. But the offense has enough. They've got, you know, a triplet action going on with Emmett. Or not with Emmett, please. With the modern-day trio that they have, that they can score 35, 40 points a game.
My big advantage that I'm giving to Philadelphia, that I'll give as long as they're the two guys there, Chip Kelly, the genius, versus Jason Garrett. I don't trust Jason Garrett in any sort of
a pretty nice season. Let's be fair.
Well, hold on. So with Sanchez, because I think what he's going to kill you on, because we're starting to see what he is now. He's going to produce and do a better job than he ever did with the Jets, but he's going to throw that one or two interceptions a game that kills you. I mean, he's gonna create turnovers.
Romo can do that too.
But it's a lot less of that with Romo. This year.
Romo's playing great, and I think Cowboys fans have to be thrilled with how he looked on Monday night. Just his mobility. I mean,
to a fourth quarter Mark Sanchez interception with less than 5 minutes to go.
This Philly team is the most hard to pin down team in the league. Like, you don't know if they're terrible or potentially great.
It's fair.
I'm gonna go with great, at least on Thursday.
All right, so Greg's going to take the Eagles in this game. Mark and I take the Cowboys, and the gold standard takes...
Just going to take a lot of turkey.
At that damn yank, that's where you get that type of humor. Every time you log in there, you're going to get some profound thoughts about social issues, about football at that damn yank. We move on to the final game of Thursday night football. Final game of Thanksgiving football. Here we go. The Seattle Seahawks, the defending world champions, Super Bowl champions, head to the Gene Center in California to face the San Francisco 49ers. I can't remember the name of the place.
Oh, I liked your – I thought it was just a joke. That was great. Just call it the Gene Center
in California
from now on.
Levi Stadium, I believe it's called.
It's in Santa Clara. No one knows
Santa
where it
Clara.
Is. Really.
It's miles away from the
Seahawks
city.
Seahawks at Niners, a great matchup. And, Greg, I think you put it well on Twitter today when you said that the fact that the – Niners and Seahawks are both 7-4 makes this game even better than if they were both 9-2 and cruising at the top of the NFC.
It makes it more meaningful because it's not just two teams cruising to the playoffs. It's two teams that genuinely hate each other that can put a big, decisive, you know, crack in the kneecaps of the other team's playoff chances. The losing team here is going to have an uphill battle to make the playoffs, whereas the winning team still has a shot to win the division, especially if it's Seattle. If they could sneak a win on the road, then you can start seeing that path to winning the NFC West.
I think if Seattle wins on the road, that's the one big differentiator here. They play again in
a couple weeks.
Yep. So it's like they're probably going to split. But I think we're all picking Seattle in this game, aren't we?
And I would.
I haven't decided.
I would like. I'm not sure either yet. Actually, this is a game I haven't decided. I'm not sure. I need to see Seattle step up on the road. You know, I think they've been a mediocre, kind of crummy road team this year, and it's time for them to show some spine because the way things are shaping up, they are unlikely to have home field throughout the NFC playoffs this year unless some things happen with the Packers and in the NFC East. And I haven't seen them get a signature road win, so this would, to me, would be the one. If you can go into San Francisco, who, by the way, the Niners have not been great in their new stadium so far, Gene Center is what it's called.
Seattle, to me, on Sunday in that 19-3 win over Arizona, looked healthier on defense. They had their mojo back. They just looked like last year's Seahawks, and they shut down the run completely. Arizona could do nothing. That, for me, is the matchup. They've given up 80 or less yards in like six of the last 11 games this season. San Francisco's not been running the ball the way that they have in the past. If they can put the clamp on that and force Kaepernick to win this game, I like Seattle's chances.
Yeah, I'll tell you what else I like. Winner of this game wins the NFC West. How about that?
I think that's fair.
I think
I could see the Cardinals.
I think they're going to the tank a little bit, and I think one of these teams is going to steal the division. And why not
proving
start
that
the
regular season in the end takes us only to the most predictable places?
Yes, if we've learned anything about football, it's always predictable. Predictable every time.
San Francisco is going to have to go beat Arizona in their rematch. They already have a loss against Arizona. They have already a couple, I think they have three division losses, so it's going to be tough for San Francisco to win the division. They will have to basically win out, I think, for any chance of winning the division.
I mean, when we talk about, oh, the Seahawks haven't been the same as they were last year, I would say the same exact thing about San Francisco.
Their offense.
They're a hard watch on offense, to be honest. They used to be the most, I thought they were the most creative unit out there. Couldn't wait to see their games. I don't feel that way this year.
On the injury side of it, too, one thing you've got to keep an eye on is Marshawn Lynch. I think Pete Carroll said he'll be out there, but I think it was his back,
yeah,
up a little bit, mm-hmm, and he was not effective on Sunday. So on a short week, we'll see what happens with that.
Pete Carroll has not won in San Francisco yet. So
Candlestick. Not in this Gene's house.
Whatever, though. It's just worth noting that the last 2 years when they've been superpowers, basically, they've split. They've won all the home games. And at no point in Pete Carroll's run has he gone to San Francisco and won a game. I'm not usually into going in, but it just shows that it's a tough thing to do.
And I'm not into this new Niners stadium.
It's
though.
Not like the Seahawks offense is playing well. This really could be like a 9-3 game. The Seahawks offense isn't playing well. San Francisco's defense is playing outstanding right now. They are playing as well or better than the Seahawks on defense.
You know what they should do with Gene Place? They should do what they did at Candlestick, where because it was such an old facility and was a multi-purpose facility, they left randomly 11,000 seats empty in that one corner of the end zone.
Right.
They should do that because maybe that was the secret mojo of San Francisco, was that golden zone of empty seats. Maybe that turns
it didn't help that
around.
The games were like 40 degrees and a blazing wind.
And by the way, on the subject of the Seahawks, I need to say something about you know, I always like when people say someone's on a show once on a radio call and they come in for 3 minutes and then the person that hosts that show is like, friend of the show. That the player has no idea they were ever even on the show.
Sure.
Richard Sherman was on the show once and the old ATL Debate Club, I believe. And we talked to him and he seemed like a nice guy. I'm over it. The press conference he had on Tuesday in which him and Doug Baldwin brought out the cardboard cutout. It was really like, it was forced. It was labored, as Wes and I sometimes save each other's bits. And the thing that got me the most annoyed was that the media immediately, because it's a default setting now whenever Richard Sherman does or says anything, is just said, brilliant, brilliant satire.
He gets it.
Genius.
He gets it. He gets the process.
Taking shots at the Shield, speaking up for the players who don't have a voice. You know what? Calm down, Richard Sherman. Just play some football. I know I'm sounding like the cranky old white guy, Greg, when you say that. But
I said that downstairs.
It's like I just – the thing that annoys me is not that Richard Sherman speaks and is outspoken. It's that if you're gonna try to pull that type of move, you've got to be a little more clever and a little more exciting about it. I didn't take anything out of it. I thought it was just annoying, and I hate that people just automatically say anything he does is genius.
When you and Wes call each other's bits labored, well, this was – you know, this was not that entertaining to start with. How about script it better? Drop a bigger hammer and get us into it. But it was
a lot of half points and a lot of kind of things that we've heard about, like complaining about the brand usage and the not being able to plug alcohol. Things, just stuff, kind of stuff that it's just like, tired. We've heard this 100 times. Greg, uncomfortable.
I'm not uncomfortable
right now. But anyway.
Well, he could have had some music, you know, Zach Attack, perhaps.
Look at you. You're one of them. You're one of those drones.
No, I'm
Richard
not.
Richard Sherman is a genius.
I pretty much agree with you that it wasn't that exciting, but I don't have any strong feelings.
The best
about
part
it.
Was we had the live feed in the newsroom watching it, and you know his bit was mostly met to silence in the press conference, and one of the reporters goes to gather his recorder after he was done, and he says to a woman that was also getting her recorder, "What was that?"
Right. Maybe summed it up better than anyone.
Anyway,
I like this new role Dan is taking in as the kind of cantankerous columnist that's been there
I
for
would
25
like to, I would,
years.
I would call
no,
him
that
a,
is
he's
not
a,
it.
These kids with their
that's
new
the
fangled.
Thing. And that's the other default setting. It's if you don't think Richard Sherman's a genius and you disagree, you're the cranky guy that doesn't get it. Fine, I'll be that guy. But it's like, no, I just don't think necessarily everything he says is because Richard Sherman is so genius. And he's operating on another level as a professional athlete. Gold standard, your take on this.
Well, being the man with the C-minus Twitter feed in the house right now, I don't want to give anyone pointers about satire. But I will say that I did find it a bit labored and only mildly funny to begin with, even if well executed.
By the way, the smartest guy in the room agrees with me, Greg. Nah, now what?
I agree. That's what I said. I basically agree with you. I just don't feel particularly strong. It doesn't drive me crazy or anything.
Okay, it drives me nuts.
Media watchdog, Dan Hanses.
All right. Anything else on this game? And I agree, Greg. I'm not sure who I'm going to pick in this. I'm going to have to give it another
Oh, by the way,
hours.
I haven't – you know, I mentioned that I was picking Seattle. That means nothing. I'll do what I feel like doing. We haven't made our picks yet.
You can check our picks out on Weekly Pick'em, the game, and we also do our power
tasty.
Picks on the website on NFL.com. It'll be up a day early this week on Wednesday because of Thanksgiving.
Hubba hubba. All right, so that's it for Tuesday's version. Edition, I should say, of the Around the NFL podcast. We will be back one day from now with our preview of all the great Week 13 action, our big preview show we do. Chris Wessel will be back. The mailman will be returned from his tape-watching voyage, so that's always going to be fun to have the whole team back together after we've been split up for a couple shows. So until then, thank you for listening, as always. This is Dan Hanses signing off for the Sizzler, the Boss, and the Gold Standard behind the glass. Until Wednesday.